Hi, my name's Gary King, and I've assembled the most formidable JFK team on planet Earth. We've got Dr. James Fetzer, Larry Rivera, who is the number one researcher in the world today when it comes to new research, and we've got Don Fox, who's not afraid to look a little bit deeper than anyone else. So if you're interested in what happened to the 35th President of the United States, then I invite you to our show. It's called The New JFK Show. And it's on YouTube. Go to Gary King YouTube channel, and we've got over 90 shows archived for you there. So if you really want to know the truth, and knowing that over 9 out of 10 researchers are working the other side of the street in a sea of disinformation, I pledge to you the truth about JFK. Go to Gary King YouTube channel and find out your true history.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade.
It looks like one of those scenes of an old building being purposely dynamited and blown.
When we are successful,
I'm just a patsy.
And we will be.
You're ready to make to come to the microphone, so we'll listen up.
A new world order.
So my name's Robbie Parker.
It might have appeared that way, but from my close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th.
President Kennedy died at 1 p.m.
Live from the Media Broadcasting Center. Center.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal. For those who may want to call in after the break, the number is 717-300-1698. 717-300-1698. Feel free to call. Just before I came down, Chris Matthews was interviewing John Nichols, who is a national correspondent for the Wisconsin State Journal, which is all in all, a reasonably good paper, not as good as I might prefer. But they were taking a camera through the campus of the University of Wisconsin-Madison and showing a line. This was a live coverage, a line that extended what would turn out to be 2 hours long of students having to get a special kind of ID in order to vote in the election today. Now, this was a consequence of a law passed by Scott Walker in the Republican-dominated legislature in 2011 that was intended to cut down or severely constrict votes by students and by the poor, and especially blacks, though there isn't a large percentage of black population here in Wisconsin, because these groups overwhelmingly tend to vote Democratic. So that they are now taking their toll by suppressing the vote right here in Wisconsin. I mean, it's shameless. And John Nichols was explaining how completely contrary this is to the past traditions of Wisconsin, which has been to encourage everyone to vote so that Wisconsin would have the highest turnout for votes of any state in the country. But Scott Walker and the Republican colleagues have been turning the state on its head, in reversing all the policies that have made Wisconsin such a wonderful place to live in the past, and where it has been very much on my mind that they would seek to rig the election today, where I was very glad to be invited onto a local talk show this morning, the Mitch Henck, H-E-N-C-K show, for the second hour, actually the first half of the second hour, but where Mitch brought me in at the end of the first hour. for me to explain why I'm so concerned that this case may be rigged, where my alarm bells went off when we had this recent poll from the Marquette School of Law showing that, purporting to show that Ted Cruz had leapfrogged again over Donald Trump and now had a 10-point lead over Trump. When, like a week or before, the polls were just the opposite, and Trump had a 10-point lead over Cruz. So when you put together the 10-point lead with now the 10-point behind, you're actually talking about a 20-point drop. Let me assure you, which you would learn from any statistician or student of polling, that just doesn't happen. That's preposterous. And indeed, when I learned of the existence of a much larger poll, where the Marquette School of Law poll was based on something like 972 samples, you know, of potential voters, a much larger poll that had over 6,000 showed that Trump was still in the lead, that although his lead wasn't as great as 10 points, he was still in the lead, and the Kasich had actually overtaken Cruz. Now, the reports I'm getting right now are at least mildly encouraging. Bill Still, who's an expert on voting, is following the exit polls, and it looks as though Trump is leading in the 50s, even the mid to high 50s. And another correspondent of mine has written to say that it looks as though Trump is going to do very, very well today. But the problem is they can still rig the vote. And that was the reason why I was on the show to explain that we'd seen this film before, that when Donald Trump ran for re-election against Mary, when Scott Walker ran for re-election against Mary Burke, who was a very popular Democrat and had a very successful bicycle company right here in Wisconsin, where bicycling is virtually the state pastime, especially in Madison. There was tremendous Democratic enthusiasm. She brought in Michelle Obama twice. She brought in Barack Obama once, and even the big dog Bill Clinton himself. There was a tremendous enthusiasm on the Democratic side, virtually none on the Republican. So when this poll had come out showing that Scott Walker was surprisingly in the lead by 53-47, my suspicion immediately was that they'd simply flipped the numbers, that the difference was probably approximately right, but that it should have been Mary Burke in the lead by 53-47. And I contacted an expert in this area, a fellow named Richard Charnon, who's a completely brilliant statistician. He got a BA in math from Queens College. He got an MS in applied math from Adelphi, an MS in operations research from the Polytechnic Institute of New York. He's published three books you can find on Amazon.com, Proving Election Fraud, Reclaiming Science of JFK Conspiracy, and Matrix of Deceit, in which he's giving a simplified explanation of how the elections can be stolen. This is really great stuff. So we collaborated on a study where he was the expert, and I was authoring the article entitled Voter Fraud versus Election Theft, Wisconsin Scott Walker Reelection. Now, the Republicans like to talk about voter fraud. That's the reason why they introduce these new restrictive laws. But voter fraud is virtually non-existent. You can go for tons and tons of elections all over the country, and the idea of someone voting in the wrong district or seeking to vote twice, it virtually never happens. So they were seeking a solution for a non-existent problem, except the real problem they were dealing with is that too many people were voting Democratic. So they had to figure out a way of constraining it, which is really shocking and disappointing and completely contrary to Wisconsin's traditions. And what Richard Charnon discovered when he studied the polls is typified by what happened in Milwaukee County, which is a bastion of Democratic support. Now, mind you, we had an historic turnout for that election, just as we're having an historic turnout today. I believe today's vote is going to exceed any previous primary vote in history. I mean, it's simply stunning how many people are turning out. when my wife and I went to our local polling station, we couldn't believe the amount of activity there. Our daughter went to hers, and it was even more were voting in her community than we're voting in ours. But it looks as though it's going to be a staggering number, even though it looks to me as though as many as 300,000 are going to be denied the right to vote because they didn't have the proper identification and wound up spending hours and hours in line or were simply unable to arrange it. And what Richard Sharnan discovered was in the county after county, but where Milwaukee County is a perfect example, the greater the number of votes cast, the greater the percentage of the vote that went to Scott Walker. In fact, when they first started tabulating, it was as much as 80% for Mary Burke and 20% for Walker. And then the percentage for Burke steadily went downward, and the percentage for Walker steadily went upward. So I was explaining all this and what was going on and why I was very concerned, because now with this new poll from the Marquette School of Law, and you want to understand from the point of view of a PSYOP, they put out polls like this to prepare you for the theft of the election. So you say when it comes out opposite what you had originally expected, but then that Marquette poll told us what was really going on. Except it wasn't. It was deliberately contrived to mislead you so that when they rigged it, when they stole the elections using electronic voting machines, and we have two types here in Wisconsin. We have the touchscreen, which don't give any record. There's no way you can do a recount, which I believe makes them unconstitutional on their face. If a candidate who loses demands a recount, it's impossible because there's no recorded or a recount to be tabulated. You don't have any ballots, for example, you could go back and study. And optical screen machines, where you have a ballot, then it actually scans them and counts them. Now, in those, theoretically, you could have a recount. But if the public is prepared psychologically for a particular outcome, there's very much less inclination. I had hoped that Mary Burke would demand a recount. In addition, on that particular ticket was a woman who was just brilliantly qualified to be the state attorney general. I mean, she was so good. So they not only were the Republicans eager that Mary Burke should not become governor, but that this particular woman, who is about as highly qualified as anyone I've ever seen for such an office, should not get into office. Well, this time around, we have an additional judicial contest for being a member of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, where Scott Walker had appointed a woman by the name of Rebecca Bradley to a low-level court, then elevated her to the state appeals court 1 year later, then 1 year later put her on the Supreme Court. It turns out that coming up to this election, it was discovered that when she was a college student, she wrote these scurrilous articles attacking gays and lesbians and saying you're better off getting AIDS than you are getting cancer because AIDS is such a fashionable disease, you're going to get medical support for it. And it was just the most blatant, biased, completely homophobic rubbish I have ever seen. I mean, the idea that this was coming from her as a college student was simply outrageous. And indeed, as a consequence of that, the last evaluation of her approval was she had a 75% disapproval rating. Well, I'm convinced that Scott Walker must have a personal relationship with this woman, because otherwise his appointing her to these positions for which she's eminently unqualified makes no sense whatsoever. But it appears to me that the Republican establishment is eager to use Wisconsin as a bulwark to try to stop the Trump train, the express, from moving forward. Because it'll be a couple of weeks before we go to New York, where Trump is very strong. In Pennsylvania, again, he's very strong. And that there was an unusual arrangement here of not only Scott Walker, who came out to endorse Ted Cruz, but also Rince Priebus, who's the head of the Republican National Committee, is from Wisconsin, and Paul, who is our Speaker of the House, is also here in Janesville, where, by the way, there was a big protest at a Trump rally that was held in Janesville, And it turns out we now learn that the protesters were being paid $15 an hour to protest. We have other reports of out in Arizona, protesters were paid as much as $3,500 to protest. In the case in Arizona, it appears it was Hillary Clinton's people who were funding it. In the case of right here in Janesville, it's less clear who was behind it, but it looks like George Soros is spending a lot of money behind MoveOn.org and other organizations to mess with what's going on here. So while I was on the show with Mitch, we had three calls. The first was from a woman who was very excited we were discussing this and wanted to know my opinion of whether if Trump were elected, he might let us in on the truth about 9/11. And I explained to her that I had founded Scholars for 9/11 Truth in December of 2005, and that that I had a book about it and another forthcoming, and that, in fact, I believe the answer to her question was yes. The second call came from someone I regard as a National Republican Committee hack, or the equivalent, who was challenging me on what I was reporting about Milwaukee, and wanting to ask about the precinct levels, and I was explaining I wasn't the expert, that was Richard Charnin, and that I was reporting our work, and so forth. And he was going, and I had remarked in passing, by the way, that no candidate in history has ever been as vilified from all sides as Donald Trump. And this guy actually claimed that Mitt Romney had been more attacked. But just think of the absurdity of that. Mitt Romney was not being attacked by the Republican Party, which was supporting him. So, I mean, this guy was clearly just there to try to undermine what I was reporting. But interestingly, there was a third caller, and this was from a woman who had served as an election judge in Milwaukee County. And she said, and apparently she had already got a hold of the charts that you can find in the article, Voter Fraud versus Election Theft, Wisconsin Scott Walker Reelection, which I co-authored with Richard Charnin. Of the vote, the way it proceeded in Milwaukee County. And she said this was very, very odd, she said, because different precincts come in virtually a random order. And therefore, there ought to have been lots of jiggles and spikes in the election and not this continuous curve that was benefiting Scott Walker and running down the vote for Mary Burke. I thought that was very significant, and I greatly appreciated that call because it added yet an extra element here of proof that election was stolen, or I'm relatively convinced that would happen here today, but it may be that if the margin of victory is too great, and there seems to be a great deal of attention being paid to the exit polls, where, by the way, when the vote is said and done, they readjust the exit polls that have been done to correspond to the tabulated vote. I think the claim is that is so voters won't be, disturbed about the integrity of the election process. But, in countries like in Europe, they use the exit polls to determine who's the winner. The tabulated vote is merely regarded as a verification of the exit polling. So that... that was a point I did not make during my conversation with Mitch, but I was thrilled to be on, and I thought the calls were excellent in their own ways, even the one that was basically discrediting by the guy who I regard as a GOP political hack. Now, something else has been going on here that I'd hoped to discuss with Mitch, but I was already, the time flew by. Is that there have been a group of right-wing Republican radio talk show hosts in Wisconsin led by a guy named Charlie Sykes out of Milwaukee who have been doing nothing but running down Donald Trump, denigrating Trump. And I thought this was extremely odd that you have six right-wing radio hosts, all of whom are on the dump Trump bandwagon, that they want to get rid of Trump. Why should that be? I regularly go back and forth between Fox and MSNBC to get alternative points of view. Sean Hannity, clearly of the right wing, is supportive of Trump. Ann Coulter, clearly of the right wing, is supportive of Trump. Even Bill O'Reilly is clearly very sympathetic to and supportive of Trump. None of them are enthusiastic about Cruz, about more I will have to say momentarily. But it seemed to me this had to be contrived. It was as though George Soros, you know, as though George Soros was giving them a bonus for attacking Trump. And this guy, Charlie Sykes, was particularly obnoxious, claiming that he was offended by Trump because here in Wisconsin, we believe in civility and decorum. I mean, that's completely ridiculous. Here in Wisconsin, the GOP has got to screw the Democrats. There's no question about it. They've taken all kinds of measures that are destructive to the progress of the state. They have weakened environmental protection. They took $800 million out of public education. He refused to accept a proposal for federal funding for high-speed transport from Milwaukee to Madison that cost the state another $800 million. His job record has been absolutely miserable, absolutely miserable. So for this Charlie Sykes to make this claim was quite ridiculous on its face. And I'd say of the six, you should have had maybe two that were Trump supporters, maybe two Cruz and a couple who went back and forth. That would have been more reasonable, or maybe even three Trump and two Cruz and one who wasn't sure. I mean, this is, in my opinion, this is clearly rigged, even right up to these right-wing radio hosts who claim they're trying to preserve the virtue of the Republican Party, which, of course, has none. Just to mention a few words about Cruz, by the way, and after the break I'll talk more about the other candidates. There's an awful lot going on to confirm the National Enquirer story that Ted Cruz has had multiple affairs with multiple women. One of the more recent came from the report that the Ashley Madison website, which is for arranging adulterous affairs in Washington, D.C., was that Cruz's office, the Senate office, was receiving a subscription to the Ashley Madison newsletter for arranging adulterous affairs. We had in addition a reporter questioning Cruz and asking him if he would assert that he was faithful to his wife, which a reporter noticed he declined to do. Though now the heat's so much on that yesterday I noticed he was asserting that, yes, he's faithful to his wife, but all the evidence is on the other side. The attorney for the D.C. madam, whose name was Palfrey, who announced, you know, believe me, I have no interest in dying, but was found hung in her tool shed, the attorney for the D.C. madam has requested that he be relieved from a court-imposed order to keep the record sealed because there are so much there that reveal, you know, the identities of a lot of people in Washington, D.C., and he's requested that he be relieved of that burden of non-release of the information and even stated this is of such importance to national security that he intends, if the Supreme Court won't hear his appeal, if it's denied at the appeals court level, that he's going to release it anyway. And I don't think anyone in the world believes that we're going to talking about Donald Trump or that we're talking about Bernie Sanders or that we're talking about John Kasich. Hillary has her own sexual escapades. Her bisexuality is rather well documented at this point in time. But it appears that the name that he wants to get out into the public from the D.C. Madam's black book is that of Ted Cruz. And now, in addition, we have a reporter for the Washington Times, which is a conservative newspaper, who tweeted that he could confirm at least two of the names on the list released by the National Enquirer, for which he was subsequently fired. I think the establishment is very much in a tizzy over this, that now so much information is coming out that it's going to tarnish Ted Cruz, and now Wayne Madsen, who may be our most important investigative journalist, has come out with a brand-new article, April 5, 6, 2016. Cruz's sex scandal expands to cross-dressing capers at Princeton, and it turns out that when Ted Cruz was at Princeton, women in sorority houses discovered he was wearing dresses to come into their houses to spy on women going into showers. He was known as a creep then. I tell you, that's a name that's going to stick. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal. I'll be right back.
Why do people order Life Change Tea? Because Life Change Tea helps the digestive system. Life Change Tea helps the colon unclog. The tea also helps with high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and many, many other health issues. Life Change Tea also tastes great. And Life Change Tea is not just green tea. Life Change Tea is a unique blend of 8 different herbs that go to town, cleaning your body of harmful toxins, bacteria, and parasites. Our tea is number one. Are you ready for your life change? Let the tea help you. Log on to our online store of helpful products to get your body on track. Log on to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Or you can call us at 928-308-0408. That's 928-308-0408. Not all tea is equal. Read our website of all the factual testimonies that prove that Life Change Tea is working. Health is important, and our quality of life is very important. Don't wait to order. Expect a life change with Life Change Tea at getthetea.com.
If you've been listening to this program for any length of time, you'll know that Fukushima, the greatest calamity in history, has now, as I've been warning since 3/11, killed off virtually the whole North Pacific Ocean and especially up and down the entire West Coast. The radiation is migrating inland and is moving across the entire country. There's only one proven defender to radiation exposure, the brilliant Chernobyl-proven discovery of Dr. Michael Kiriak, which combines the 4 most potent and powerful algaes on the planet, imported to the U.S. and known as Bio Superfood. I've taken Bio Superfood every day for several years now and want you to do the same for your sake and the health and safety of your family and loved ones. Take the banner at the top of Rents.com and prepare to learn how to save your life.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, continuing with my discussion of the candidates. Cruz, I believe, is going to sink into a cesspool of his own sexual excess. I mean, the reason it matters with Cruz is because he draws his support principally from evangelical Christians, and he's presented himself as a paragon of virtue and morality. I do not think being in Palfrey's little black book would cause anyone who supports Donald Trump to even think twice about it. And there may be others who could be unblemished, but when you have a Ted Cruz character who set himself up as a paragon of morality, this is absolutely devastating. And I'm telling you, there are too many sources that are confirming this story. It appears to be true. And whether it was 4 or 5, it may be one of those was named by mistake. But, you know, when you combine subscribing to the Ashley newsletter for adulterous affairs, being in the D.C. Madam's little black book, having a reporter for the Washington Times being able to confirm at least 2 of the names on the list, and when you have Wayne Manson confirming that he was even involved in bizarre peccadilloes as an undergraduate at Princeton, where, by the way, he was there over 20 years after I had long since graduated. When I was at Princeton, it was all men. And there were no sororities on the campus at the time, but in Cruz's day, there were. And apparently he was being a voyeur, a peeping Tom, and he tried to get himself in the position where he could watch the women go back and forth to the shower, and you know, it's really pretty disgusting when you come right down to it. So I think that Ted Cruz is toast. What about the other candidates? Well, I had a correspondent write to me and say how Tom Hartman is going on and on about Hillary, and he won't even consider the possibility that Bernie or another candidate might have virtues compared to Hillary. And he suggested I might call. So I thought that was a worthwhile idea. Obviously, he has an enormous audience, so I sought to call, but unsurprisingly, the lines were plugged. So I did record a message for him and marked it for urgent for delivery that ran along the following lines. I said, Tom, this is Jim from Madison. I've been having debates with, about the candidates. And I wondered if you could address the following, where it looks as though Bernie and even Trump are preferable to Hillary. I said, first of all, concerns NAFTA and the TPP, where the TPP, if it were to be adopted, would render the sovereignty of the United States null and void, because you'd have a panel of corporate attorneys who can override the laws and statutes of any of the 14 Pacific Rim nations that are covered thereby, including the Constitution of the United States. Now, both Bernie and Trump oppose NAFTA and the TPP, but Hillary, of course, her husband Bill passed NAFTA. She was very keen on it at the time, but it's gutted her manufacturing and industrial base. And Hillary previously said that she regarded the TPP as the gold standard of trade agreement. Now I think she's had so much feedback that she's hesitating, qualifying, claims she no longer supports it. But frankly, she is so untrustworthy and has such a high record of false claims. I think that's merely a stamp. The second I said was, and Bernie and Trump have both denounced the wars in the Middle East and the invasion of Iraq, where Trump has observed he wishes only we could retrieve the $4 to $5 trillion we've squandered, turning the Middle East into chaos, whereas Hillary is even talking about, like last year at Dartmouth, she declared that when she became president, she would attack Iran and bomb it into the Stone Age, which is quite bizarre considering that Iran is like the most peaceful among the major nations of the world, having not attacked any other nation since 1775. And although I didn't add this to Hartman, I mentioned to you that the Constitution of the United States began its ratification in 1787. George Washington was inaugurated in 1789. So that for longer than the United States has existed as a constitutional republic, Iran has not attacked any other nation. Would that could be said of the United States? And third, I said, has to do with gun control. Both Bernie and Trump are staunch defenders of the Second Amendment, where Hillary is starting to play on the Obama program, even citing Sandy Hook and so forth, in defense of her desire to take weapons away from the American people. And I mentioned that I read a study in a book about Sandy Hook that explained that when guns are banned, crime goes up, which indeed is an appendix that I put into the book, Nobody Died at Sandy Hook. And I said, and if you look at Chicago, there's a nice illustration, because Chicago has perhaps its most stringent gun control laws in the country, and yet the statistics for gun violence are skyrocketing and going, you know, upward dramatically. So I hope that Tom Hartman, could help me to sort out these issues. And I sent it to him urgent, but, you know, that it will ever get on the air is highly improbable. I see we have a caller from Hawaii, George. It's... How are you?
Yeah, hello, how are you?
Good to have you back again.
Yeah, say, I wanted to make a comment about this Trump and the abortion issue.
Sure.
I've been reading quite a few, I guess you'd call them editorials, where they're stating that actually Donald Trump brought a lot of clarity to the issue of abortion. Basically, the anti-abortion plank has been in the Republican Party's platform since approximately 1986, I believe. And all he did was, in his own way, since he's not really a consummate politician, but rather a person who's interested in the well-being of America, brought forth the idea, well, if and it was a hypothetical question in the first place, if abortion was made illegal and the woman had an abortion, then she should be punished just like any other crime. And of course, the Republicans even themselves are not willing to go forward to the idea that thousands of women should be going to jail over exercising, you know, the abort a fetus within the first trimester. So anyway, it's just interesting that there's been a lot of comments in the press for those that are reading.
Well, you're absolutely right that
about
it's this. George, you're absolutely right that there's been a long-standing plank in the Republican platform to tolerate abortion only in the case of rape, incest, or to save the life of the mother. Many are upset with Roe v. Wade because it also has an exception for the health of the mother, which they feel could be subjected to abuse. I was quite relieved when, in fact, Trump reverted to the position that the law as it stands, Roe v. Wade, should not be changed. He used to be pro-choice. I believe he should continue to be pro-choice. This is an issue where surely the Democratic solution is to leave the decision up to every woman under her personal circumstances in consultation with her physician and her family to make that decision for herself. I regard it as grossly undemocratic and indeed even immoral to force a woman to carry to term a pregnancy that is unwanted. We know that there's a very high percentage of unwanted pregnancies that are born live that grow up to be juvenile delinquents at great cost to the state. It's just a terrible way to begin, but most importantly, consider this. Slavery is immoral if any action is immoral. And what the right wing would do with a pro-life movement is force women to become reproductive slaves by carrying the term a fetus that is unwanted. I think that's as bad as it gets. So I was relieved when he returned to the position of maintaining that the law as it stands is correct. But, George, I'm not denying your suggestion that, in fact, it was a clarifying moment in relation to debates within the Republican Party. Had I extended my conversation with Tom Hartman, I would have gone on to say, by the way, but I think that Bernie has a better proposal about health care because extending Medicare to everyone is the way to go. Medicare was originally introduced with the intention that it should be extended, and that Trump's idea of these mini health insurance programs for every person is just way too complicated, in my opinion. But that Trump had the right solution about our borders and the temporary ban on Muslims, whether his critics constantly drop the phrase temporary ban. Bear in mind that Trump back in January had talked about Brussels being a beautiful place, but that had become a hotbed of terrorism, where the attacks in Brussels bear him out. And while I think if you undertake a closer scrutiny, as I have done in one of my recent shows, you'll find that things did not go down the way they are claimed. Nevertheless, when you look at these attacks in Paris and in Brussels, it makes it look as though Trump knows what he's talking about when he wants to impose some stringent conditions, indeed a temporary ban on Muslims into the United States, until we figure out what's going on. I think that's a totally reasonable position. And the last polls I saw show that about two-thirds of Americans were in agreement. Well, it may seem odd about the fence, building the fence with Mexico, which comes up again and again. It turns out that Hungary just this past year put up a fence to try to stem the Muslim migration into Hungary, and it worked like a charm. They went from like 6,700 immigrants entering the country to the next day down to around 400, and after that it was less than 40 a day. So it's apparent that these walls can actually work, and we're getting more of a rationale for building the walls right now from Trump and his people. That is very, very helpful and desirable. I do think that Trump has made a number of false steps here, including with regard to his campaign manager, who apparently did grab the reporter. That was unfortunate. She said all she wanted was an apology. They should have apologized. That would have been the thing to do and not allow it to grow into a big brouhaha. The reports right now that Trump's old guard, these are people who have been with Donald for decades, are upset about the new guard, these new people coming in to help to advise him. But I hope that between Wisconsin and New York in a couple of weeks, that he will reconsider how he presents himself, that he will begin being more formal. A spokesman for Trump was talking about his AIPAC presentation, which, of course, did not enchant me, though it wasn't more deferential than, say, Hillary's statement or Ted Cruz's statement, though it was slightly more deferential than what John Kasich reported. We have a horrendous problem with Israel running the government of the United States. AIPAC is by far the most powerful lobby. John F. Kennedy had its precursor, the World Jewish Congress, had to register as a foreign agent. No president since his demise has been willing to take that step. Prominent scholars from Harvard and the University of Chicago published a massive study about the Israeli lobby, for which they were then properly pilloried. In other words, here they were exposing how Israel is exerting tremendous influence over our politicians and members of Congress through this very powerful lobby. Everyone recognizes it's by far the most powerful lobby in Washington, D.C., where Cynthia McKinney even recently explained that when new members of Congress come to Washington, they're asked to sign a pledge to put the interests of Israel ahead of those of the United States. And those who decline to do so discover that they are confronted with a well-financed alternative candidate, or perhaps that their district has been redrawn and they no longer have a position. I'd also like to talk about Hillary and her emails, by the way, which are equally troubling. It turns out that, you know, it's not just having a server of unclassified emails, which appears to have been her deliberate preference, but that the NATO killed Gaddafi to stop Libyan creation of gold-backed currency. I have mentioned before that in relation to Libya, Hillary Clinton was a driving force to attack Libya. There were lots of stories floated about the Gaddafi's abuse of the Libyan people, but they were untrue. This is a typical kind of demonization that takes place before to try to convince the American people that there's a justification for taking an unjustifiable act. And in this case, Gaddafi had a history of benefiting the Libyan people, sharing the wealth of the nation with the people. National health care, national public education, newly married couples were receiving $45,000 gifts. Anyone who had a medical problem that could not be resolved in Libya would be flown anywhere in the world with a relative or a friend, all expenses paid to have it cared for. There are national warehouses providing food to anyone who was in need. Crime rate in Libya was virtually zero, because no one was going without their needs being met. Gaddafi was a dictator, yes, but he was a benevolent dictator, which even Aristotle recognizes the most efficient form of government and the most beneficial to the people. We have a centralized authoritarian government that's taking actions to benefit the people. This is what Gaddafi was doing. What we have now discovered from these emails is that, you know, Gaddafi was not only undertaking all of that, but the Great Waterworks Project that would have turned North Africa into a veritable oasis, but he'd also abandoned the petrodollar and was introducing the gold dinar, which was widely expected to become the currency of all of Africa. Well, now, listen to this. Washington, D.C., in spite of French-led UN Security Council Resolution 1973 creating a no-fly zone over Libya with the express intent of protecting civilians, one of the over 3,000 new Hillary Clinton emails released by the State Department on New Year's Eve contained damning evidence of Western nations using NATO as a tool to topple Libyan leader Muammar al-Gaddafi. The NATO overthrow was not for the protection of the people, but instead it was to thwart Gaddafi's attempt to create a gold-backed African currency to compete with a Western central banking monopoly. The emails indicate the French-led NATO military initiative in Libya was also driven by a desire to gain access to a greater share of Libyan oil production and to undermine a long-term plan by Gaddafi to supplant France as a dominant power in the Francophone Africa region. It goes on to report Yeah, this is from Sidney Blumenthal, a confidant of Hillary, where in April 2011 email sent to the Secretary of State by her unofficial advisor and longtime confidant, Sidney Blumenthal, reveals the predatory Western intention, the Foreign Policy Journal reports. The email identifies French President Nicolas Sarkozy as leading the attack on Libya with five specific purposes in mind: to obtain Libyan oil, to ensure French influence in the region, to increase Sarkozy's reputation domestically, to assert French military power, and to prevent Gaddafi's influence in what is considered to be Francophone Africa. Most astounding is the lengthy section delineating the huge threat that Gaddafi's gold and silver reserves, estimated at 143 tons of gold and a similar amount in silver, pose to the French franc circulating as a prime African currency. So Hillary was very boastful and used a quote attributed to Julius Caesar from, you know, about the Gallic Wars, "I came, I saw, I conquered," to say, "We came, we saw, he died." Hillary was gleeful about the death of Gaddafi, who in fact was going to be awarded a humanitarian recognition by the United Nations only a week later, which may have precipitated the timing of the attack. George, are you still there?
Well, you know, on regards to the emails,
yeah.
I'm sure you've heard about this, that apparently in that stack of emails, there's another one from one of the software development officers of Google, in which Google was attempting to develop software that would identify defectors from the Syrian elected regime, and you know, working with Hillary on the overthrow of Bashar al-Assad. I'd just like to point out that people think that the fact that that Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State has given her a great deal of experience, but actually, in my opinion, that was a political appointment by Barack Obama to, because she'd lost the election, and it was just a good way of getting her out of his hair.
Yes, I think that's an excellent point. And another question it raises is, why did she leave her appointment as Secretary of State? I mean, that's very surprising in and of itself. So it may be that was a condition she considered to be a requirement for her to run for the nation's highest office. The fact is that Hillary is not a good person. She's not a decent human being. She's a warmonger. Apart from Ted Cruz, who's talked about, you know, annihilating virtually every country in the Middle East, Hillary is by far the most hawkish. She's clearly a neocon. These are the people who brought us 9/11 and this endless string of wars in the Middle East, where both Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump have outright condemned all these wars in the Middle East, where Bernie pointed out Hillary voted for the invasion of Iraq, which he himself opposed. And Donald has been foursquare against continuing those wars. They both qualify, in my opinion, as non-interventionists, in the sense that while they'd be willing to use American military power when it was absolutely required, that they're not into nation building or taking out other states, where all these attacks on Syria, of course, are part of the completion of the plan revealed to us by the General Clark when he returned from serving as commanding general Allied Forces Europe, which is supreme commander, which means he was a commanding general of NATO, which he revealed at the Commonwealth Club when Wesley Clark told us there was a plan to destabilize, take out the governments of seven countries in the next 5 years, beginning with Iraq and Libya, ending with Syria and Iran, where Russia fortuitously has put an end to it. George, I know you have more to say.
You know, I think that so-called leak by Wesley Clark may have been a deliberate trial balloon or a deliberate way of informing the American people that this is what was going to happen. I've kind of have reflected upon this and just don't feel that he was strolling through the Pentagon getting top secret information and then passing it on to the American public. I just don't think that's how it works.
Well, it was only years later that he revealed it. Commonwealth Club, what he had learned years earlier. So I think it was belated and reflecting on the situation that he felt it was important to come clean with the American people. I do regard him as one
I think he stated that long ago before all these wars started. That's my impression.
I think it was only at the Commonwealth Club after the wars had, were well underway that he revealed it. And I think it was like
the Iraq War,
2007.
Not these other countries.
Well, the invasion of Afghanistan began within a month of 9/11, and then the Iraq War 3 years later. So we're talking about 2003 or 2004, I think 2003. But that, you know, it's just spread. It's one of the most god-awful mistakes in the history of the United States to get involved in taking out all these modern Arab states. It was all contrived for the benefit of Israel. Benjamin Netanyahu was the brains behind planning 9/11, which was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons, and the Department of Defense, most of whom had come from Project for a New American Century, most of whom were dual U.S.-Israeli citizens and the Mossad. Many intelligence agencies have observed that there were only two in the world that could have pulled it off, the CIA and the Mossad, and in this case they were acting in concert. More, George.
Well, I'd like to move back a little bit to Donald Trump. I think one of his really huge problem that he has is that he's running as a Republican. I think if he had been able to remain truly independent, you would have seen a different Donald Trump that would have been much more rational and more appealing to the public in general. But the fact that he's had to run as a Republican has forced him into a box and where he's being attacked from all sides. I mean, it's astounding that the Republicans would attack their front runner with such vehemence.
If he wins the election, I think you're going to find the emergence of that more rational, moderate Donald Trump. Trying to create a third party is so virtually impossible. I think he had to decide as a matter of practicality to run as a Republican, which he has done. Charlie Sykes, who is leading the Dump Trump movement here, one of those six talk radio hosts, has said that if Trump prevails today, he can see no way to possibly stop him because they've thrown everything at him here in Wisconsin, up to and including the kitchen sink. George, I want to thank you.
Yeah, well, it's going to be hard to stop those rigged electronic voting machines, I'll tell you that.
George, I appreciate your call. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, thanking all of you for listening.
I'd like to invite you to take a look at some of the most important products in the realm of health and hygiene I've ever seen, all from Trioxy. As many of you know, ozone oxygen is highly effective for many different uses in the home or office place, from purifying the air you breathe to the water you drink. In fact, the city of Los Angeles, among others, uses ozone to purify the drinking water for millions. Uses of ozonated water produced by the Trioxy Pure.
Less than 3% of you people read books, because less than 15% of you read newspapers. Right now, there is a whole, an entire generation that never knew anything that didn't come out of this tube. This tube can make or break presidents, popes, prime ministers. Television is not the truth. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We deal in illusions, man. None of it is true. But you people sit there day after day, night after night, all ages, colors, creeds.
broadcasting live on network radio.
So turn off your television sets, turn them off now, turn them off and leave them off.
Now say, with moral certainty and considerable scientific authority, that the death of JFK was committed by a meticulously executed conspiracy which was obscured by an extensive cover-up. Murder in Dealey Plaza, edited by James Fetzer, goes to the heart of the JFK assassination. You'll read new and up-to-date information regarding the Secret Service, the Lincoln limousine, the medical evidence, the cover-up, altering the film, framing the patsy, and the silent historians. Also, 16 smoking guns, each one crushing the government's lone assassin scenario. A world-class chronology of November 22nd, 1963. Chapters by David W. Mantic, Gary Aguilar, Vincent Palomara, Douglas Weldon, Jack White, Ira David Wood III, James H. Fetzer, Doug Horn, and a classic essay by Bertrand Russell. The complete story in the pages of one single book, edited by James H. Fetzer. Read it now. Read it again. You'll use it as a reference. Murder in Dealey Plaza. Available at Amazon.com and major bookstores around the world. It's murder.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade.
It looks like one of those scenes of an old building being purposely dynamited and blown.
When we are successful,
I'm just a patsy.
And we will be.
We're ready to make to come to the microphone, so we'll listen up.
A new world order.
So my name's Robbie Parker.
It might have appeared that way, but from my close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th.
President Kennedy died at 1 p.m.
Live from the Media Broadcasting Center. Center.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal. That was a short musical intro, but it's fine. There's lots to discuss. The call-in number after the break is 717-300-1698, 717-300-1698. Now, a lot has been going on, and some of it you will be unaware of. Of course, everyone knows Ted Cruz is reported to have won in Wisconsin, where Cruz, according to the official tabulated vote, won 48.3%, Trump 35.1%, Kasich 14.1%, and where Bernie Sanders trounced Hillary by 56.5 to 43.1. But the Wisconsin is therefore regarded as adding momentum to Bernie Sanders' revolution and putting pressure on Hillary, because this is like the seventh contest in a row that he has won, where those, like six of the most recent have been huge margins, you know, like where he got 70% or 60% of the vote and all that. So we might well have expected that Wisconsin was going to be similar I'll explain why what happened to prevent that from happening. I became very concerned when the Marquette School of Law reported about a week before the election that Ted Cruz had leapfrogged against Donald Trump, because he'd gone from having at least a 10-point lead to now being trailing Cruz by 10. That's a 20-point shift. That kind of thing just doesn't happen. So an open-minded local radio host by the name of Mitch Hank had me on his show the actual day of the primary, and even announced in advance that I was going to be up to talk about why I believe the election was rigged. And indeed, when I was on the show, I explained that we'd seen this in a movie before, because not long before Scott Walker's run against Mary Burke for the Wisconsin gubernatorial race, Marquette had another poll that was showing this guy Walker ahead of Burke by like 53-47, which made no sense at all. There was great enthusiasm by the Democrats, contrary to the popular opinion, and Scott Walker is very controversial and unpopular here in Wisconsin. And it seemed to me it should have been, if it were accurate, the opposite. I protested, wrote some articles, got on a couple of shows to talk about it at the time, and eventually contacted Richard Charnin, who's a brilliant statistician and expert on voter fraud, who's published two books on Amazon.com. And we shared our resources and put together an article entitled Voter Fraud versus Election Theft, Scott Walker's Wisconsin Reelection, which you can find online. Now, I mentioned voter fraud because Republicans talk a lot about voter fraud. And I think most citizens don't spend time thinking about the difference between voter fraud and election theft, because voter fraud is very rare. It involves a person voting in two different districts or, you know, voting twice. It's extremely rare. So the Republicans focus on that, use it as an excuse to impose restrictions on access to voting. For example, this time around, you had to have a special kind of photograph ID so that even the student IDs for students at UW-Madison and other campuses had to get a special voter ID. Now, the estimate has been that this may have excluded as many as 300,000 students, blacks, poor people, can't get around. You got to go to the, you know, the driver's license bureau. They close down the number of times, the hours of access to the driver's license bureau. All Republican driven, because they know that if the elections are honest, they'll never win. They represent an increasingly tiny segment of the population, the rich and powerful. They sway a lot of social conservatives by issues like abortion, flag burning, pot smoking, to vote Republican, even though it's contrary to their economic interests, which is part of why this year's election is so fascinating, because Donald Trump actually represents the interests of the people. And because Richard and I had done this work together, I brought him back onto my show recently, about a week ago, The Real Deal, episode number 183, Richard Charnin on Stealing Elections, where the example I like to use is of Milwaukee County, which is a bastion of Democratic support here in Wisconsin. And where, you know, the turnout was historic. That favors Democrats. We had Michelle Obama twice, Barack once, a big dog Bill Clinton. People were enthusiastic, huge turnout. And yet, in Milwaukee County, while it started out that Mary Burke was getting like 80% of the vote and Scott Walker only 20, the longer the evening went on, greater the number of votes cast, the greater the percentage that went to Scott Walker. Stop and think about it. It doesn't make sense. So I was talking about this on the air with Mitch Hank. The indicators were there with this phony poll from the Marquette School of Law, which is intended to be a priming the pump psychologically. So when the election comes out different than you thought, you say, oh, yeah, I guess that Marquette poll had it right. When it didn't, it had it wrong. It was really quite fascinating. We had three callers. while I was on the show, and one wanted to know if I thought there was any likelihood that Trump would talk about 9/11, reveal the truth about 9/11 if he were elected, and I explained why I thought that was a very real possibility. A second was some kind of GOP hack who was objecting to my statement that Trump is the most vilified candidate in history, suggesting that Mitt Romney had been attacked. But he was ignoring that Trump is being attacked by the right as well as the left. The Republican establishment is attacking Trump. This is completely unprecedented. The third, very interestingly, was a woman who said that she'd been an election judge in Milwaukee, and that what she found interesting about the graphs that had been published by Richard Charnin is that they were more or less continuous. She said that the poll results are turning into random order, and therefore there should have been a lot of jerks of where, you know, jumps up and down depending on when the polls were introduced, not this continuous line. So she was actually introducing an additional reason for believing that the election had been rigged. Well, let me remind you now, in this case, we had Cruz supposed to be with 48, Trump with 35, Kasich with 14. A fellow by the name of Bill Still went to a precinct here in Wisconsin, and he watched as the votes were being put up and compared them with a machine vote, and the result was quite startling. He conducted exit polls. And this was a precinct that had nearly as many voters as the Marquette poll had. It was actually, the Marquette poll was less than 1,000, maybe around 900. This was close to 800 in this district. And the exit poll showed Trump 59%, Cruz 28, Kasich 13. And they also tabulated the absentee vote, which was virtually identical. In fact, it was 59%, 28%, 13%. Now, this Bill Still guy is a very hands-on guy. He never believed that there was such a thing as election theft going on, especially in a place like Wisconsin. When the machine vote was tabulated, Trump 50 in this particular district, Trump 50%, Cruz 38, Kasich 11. So they'd given 10 points to Cruz. They'd taken 9 away from Trump and, you know, to depress it, and 1 or 2 from Kasich. Similar with Sanders. Sanders had 60 to 37 over Clinton, absentee 62 to 38, but the machine vote was 55 to 45. Now, interestingly, this is exactly what I was predicting in my conversation with Mitch Hank. I was saying they're going to depress, they want to stop Trump here, so they want to have Cruz come in ahead of Trump. And with regard to Bernie and Hillary, they just want to reduce the margin so it doesn't have such an impact. In fact, they wind up with nearly the same number of delegates. And it turns out there's more confirmation for what I'm telling you. There's a place called isidewith.com, isidewith.com. That's one word. For the 2016 presidential election, Donald Trump versus Ted Cruz. Now, it's a map, and if you drag your cursor over the different precincts, as I have done, you find the pre-election preferences that were being tabulated there, and each of the districts actually has as many or more than were covered in the Marquette poll. As the first district, as I recall, was over 1,000 participants in the poll. And here, you go through the districts, and every single district, Trump is winning by huge margins, like 70 to 30 or 70 to 20 to 10. I mean, there's just no question about it. I mean, the dimensions of this theft are simply monumental. So go there, isidewith.com, 2016 presidential poll, Donald Trump versus Ted Cruz, for further confirmation. And as I say, in the case of Bernie and Hillary, it was similar, reducing the gap substantially. So it turns out that some who had been following this very closely, who were Trump supporters, were keeping records of the tabulated vote the way it was coming in before it was manipulated. In District 1, it was Trump 66, Cruz 35. District 2, 66 to 34. 3, 67 to 34. 4, 58 to 42. 5, 58 to 43. 6, 61 to 39. District 7, 69 to 32, District 8, 65 to 35, all of which was quite different, of course, than was reported in the press, because these were Trump victories in every district. Trump would have run away with it had this been an honest election. And Richard Charnin, the very fellow with whom I collaborated, did a study and showed that Hillary should have had like 68% of the vote. 68% of the vote. And of course, they depressed it, as I've just explained. It should have been like 68 to 32. But they didn't want that. And indeed, there's a rather remarkable aspect of the Bill Steele interview, which you want to track down, because it only runs like 13 minutes long. Go to the Steele Report number 771. Voter fraud must be stopped. Steele Report number 771, voter fraud must be stopped, because he mentions that a fellow who was at the Republican National Committee heard this previous guy give the instruction that the Diebold machines in Wisconsin should be set to make sure Trump doesn't get over 50% on any of those machines. This is very, very troubling. Because it's very, very likely they're going to try to pull the same stunt in New York, where he is leading by overwhelming margins. Now, there's a story, which I regard as a cover, a beard to conceal what's going on, about the radio talk show host being so influential and on a mission to stop Trump, where a guy named Charlie Sykes has been interviewed on TV, and he's about as arrogant as they come. And he claimed that that Trump just was violating Wisconsin's tradition of civility and decency. Well, this is absurd. Tradition here is to steal elections. In fact, Richard Charnin, during my recent program with him, explained five different elections in recent Wisconsin history have been stolen. Not only his re-election against Mary Burke, but his recall election, which was largely what catapulted him to national attention, being the only governor among three to have been subjected to a recall to survive it. And then a woman named Kloppenberg was a jurist, very good, was running against a guy named Prosser to be the chief justice of the court. And Prosser won over Kloppenberg. Charnin explained that vote was manipulated, too. And in fact, we had a justice appointee, a woman by the name of Rebecca Bradley, who comes across as a bimbo to me, who'd suffered the embarrassment of having been discovered to have written outrageous columns when she was at Marquette as an undergraduate, assailing those who suffer from AIDS or who are gay or lesbians. I mean, utterly vicious stuff, which led a recent survey to show that she actually had a 75% disapproval rating. Well, they wanted to get her on the court. In fact, this guy, Walker, who, in my opinion, has to have a personal relationship with Rebecca Bradley. Otherwise, none of this makes any sense. He's appointed her to three judicial positions in 3 years, including to the Supreme Court, so she'd have the advantage of being a member of the court. But to guarantee it, they had to steal it. And she won by a lesser margin than the others, but I have no doubt that Kloppenberg was, if this were all legitimate, won. We know, of course, that Trump has high unfavorables, but it turns out that Hillary has equally high unfavorables. In the East, 39% favorable, 53% unfavorable. In the Midwest, 36-62% unfavorable. In the South, 36-60% unfavorable. In the West, 38-54% unfavorable. I mean, it goes across the board. So she has a problem because women don't like her. And it's really quite striking. So people forget that, you know, while Trump is described as having a low popularity, Hillary is nearly as bad. And I think the potential for adjusting that by bringing out more and more about Hillary is immense, because her email problems are enormous. She has said when she becomes president, she wants to bomb Iran. I mean, there's a host of issues to which I shall return by and by, not necessarily tonight. Now, the Clinton campaign has a new strategy. Forget the base, disqualify Sanders, because he's winning all these campaigns by such a large margin. So one of the steps they have taken is to have published in the New York Daily News an article attacking Bernie Sanders for being opposed to the lawsuits against the manufacturers of weapons in relation to Sandy Hook. I mean, this is completely disgusting. Any of you who are familiar with my book, Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, 425 pages, 250 photographs. We have 13 contributors, a half a dozen PhD retired or current college professors demonstrated the school was closed by 2008. There was no one there for Adam Lanza to have shot, that it was a two-day FEMA drill. We even have the FEMA manual in the book, where some became so confused they put up websites on the 13th, the day before the shooting officially took place, and even Adam Lanza's date of death was initially recorded in the Social Security death index as having occurred on the 13th, making his feat in shooting 20 children and 6 adults the following day all the more remarkable. But the fact is, Adam didn't buy the weapons. Adam took them from his mother, if you believe the official story. So why in the world should there be a lawsuit against the manufacturer of the weapons he was alleged to use, even if the official story were true, when it's provably false? I mean, it's completely ridiculous. The deeper you get into it, the more you understand. And in fact, the Daily News played a key role here, because we've been seeking the death certificates. The clerk of Newtown entered into secret negotiations with the state legislature to avoid releasing death certificates. And then when it actually came to pass, they were nowhere to be found. The claim has been made that they were released to the New York Daily News, but we can't get them from the New York Daily News. They won't release them. The only one we have is one from a guy who claims to be the father of Noah Posner by the name of Lenny, which he gave to Kelly Watt, which turns out to be a fabrication. Now, just think about it on its face. If this man, Lenny Posner, had actually lost a son, Noah, at Sandy Hook, he wouldn't have to fabricate a death certificate, which is the bottom half of a legit that's photoshopped together with the top half of a fake. It doesn't even have a file number. It has wrong estimated time of death, 11 a.m., when the shooting took place between 9:30 and 9:35. Sandy Hook was a hoax. It has been proven. Hillary has to know. It was the handiwork of Barack Obama and Eric Holder, in complicity with the governor, the Connecticut State Police, and a host of other actors who've been handsomely rewarded. The 26 families have received in excess of $1 million apiece. Even the bit players, the state police, have split $2.3 million. The school district got $50 million to build a new school, where the average cost around the country is only $7. So, you know, Hillary is playing a game here. She's using a hoax to attack Bernie Sanders when his position is totally reasonable. And Bernie appropriately observed that he thought it was a travesty to politicize a tragedy, assuming, taking for face value, that it actually happened. But as I point out, even if it had, there'd be no basis for a lawsuit. Now get this. Ted Cruz had, attacked Donald Trump at one point for New York values. Well, he's getting quite a reception in New York. He was heckled out of the Bronx. I mean, this is very, very bad. And he's not going to do well there at all. Now, most of you know about the National Enquirer having run a story about him having had affairs with 5 different women. Well, it turns out that his email address, his Senate email address, was a subscriber of Ashley Madison's adultery dating service. Dr. Ewan, Fellowship of the Minds, has published about it. That's circumstantial confirmation. The D.C. Madam scandal is once more relevant because the attorney for Palfrey, who was found hung in a tool shed, Deborah Jean Palfrey, says there's vital information contained in her black book, which we all believe is information about Ted Cruz. I mean, it's not going to be, it makes a difference to him because he has presented himself as a paragon of morality. And he's an evangelical Christian. And this is not going to go down well as this story unfolds. And in fact, the attorney has said that even if the Supreme Court denies him the right to unseal the information, he's going to release it because he believes it's in the national interest. Indeed, the Washington Times fired a journalist by the name of Drew Johnson for confirming two of Ted Cruz's alleged mistresses. How is that? This guy says, coming clean, from what I know, at least two of the women named as Cruz mistresses by National Enquirer are accurate. And in fact, the National Enquirer has quite a good record when it comes to this. Then it turns out we have the Panama Papers. And here's a new report on guess which presidential candidate has ties to the just-released Panama Papers. Scandal follows the Clintons like stink follows garbage. Now add yet another smelly situation to Hillary's long list of campaign concerns, including the FBI investigation into Mailgate, the congressional investigation into Benghazi, Bill Clinton's decidedly subpar performance on the trail, and Bernie Sanders' better-than-expected backing by Democratic primary and caucus voters. This is Jim Fetzer on The Raw Deal. Stand by. I'll be right back.
Why do people order Life Change Tea? Because Life Change Tea helps the digestive system. Life Change Tea helps the colon unclog. The tea also helps with high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and many, many other health issues. Life Change Tea also tastes great. And Life Change Tea is not just green tea. Life Change Tea is a unique blend of 8 different herbs that go to town, cleaning your body of harmful toxins, bacteria, and parasites. Our tea is number one. Are you ready for your life change? Let the tea help you. Log on to our online store of helpful products to get your body on track. Log on to GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. Or you can call us at 928-308-0408. That's 928-308-0408. Not all tea is equal. Read our website of all the factual testimonies that prove that Life Change Tea is working. Health is important, and our quality of life is very important. Don't wait to order. Expect a life change with Life Change Tea at GetTheTea.com.
If you've been listening to this program for any length of time, you'll know that Fukushima, the greatest calamity in history, has now, as I've been warning since 3/11, killed off virtually the whole North Pacific Ocean and especially up and down the entire West Coast. The radiation is migrating inland and is moving across the entire country. There's only one proven defender to radiation exposure, the brilliant Chernobyl-proven discovery of Dr. Michael Kiriak, which combines the 4 most potent and powerful algaes on the planet, imported to the U.S. and known as bio-superfood. I've taken bio-superfood every day for several years now and want you to do the same for your sake and the health and safety of your family and loved ones. Take the banner at the top of Rents.com and prepare to learn how to save your life.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, with further developments, at least one of which is quite sensational. I reiterate, if anyone's inclined to call, the number is 717-300-1698. Wayne Madsen may be our nation's most principled, qualified, professional investigative journalist. It's a lost art since Woodward and Bernstein broke the Watergate case wide open with all the president's men. The companies, newspapers have less and less invested in investigative journalism. It's time consuming. It can be expensive. It has no guaranteed payoff, but it can make a real difference. For example, Wayne Madsen, I know Wayne personally. We've met before. We participated in a conference, actually the Midwest 9/11 Truth Conference a couple years ago. He's a super guy. Has just revealed the discovery of photographs showing the father of Ted Cruz with Lee Harvey Oswald in New Orleans when Lee was handing out Fair Play for Cuba pamphlets. I can't begin to tell you how astonishing this development turns out to be. The second hour of my show on Wednesday, The Real Deal, which is 2 hours a night. It's a video show Monday, Wednesday, Friday with Media Broadcasting Center. We have been reviewing just the very photographs here because there's a fellow by the name of Michael Payne appears to be on the left-hand side. You can't actually see it in the cropped version of the photograph that was posted by Wayne Madsen. But Michael Payne was the husband of Ruth Payne, both of whom have ties to the CIA, where Ruth Payne just happened to arrange for Lee Oswald to get a position at the Texas School Book Depository a couple of weeks before the motorcade would drive past, and where we happen to know that this was all contrived. Lee was actually not only not the lone gunman, but not even one of the shooters, because we've been able to identify him as standing in the front door of the book depository, where he was captured in the famous photograph taken by James Ike Alchin, which many people know. It's the most famous photograph of the assassination. JFK is clutching his throat. He's actually been hit twice already, once in the back, 5.5 inches below the collar to the right of the spinal column. And then now by a shot that passed through the windshield, they actually had to move his military aide, who would normally have been sitting between the driver, William Greer, and Roy Kellerman, the agent in charge, and would have been hit by the bullet had it not been moved to a vehicle at the very back, along with the president's personal physician, Admiral George Berkeley, to make sure he'd be in the worst possible position to render emergency aid to the president should it become necessary. But Madsen also has a photograph of Rafael Cruz with his son at a Freedom Works event in Salt Lake City in 2013, where Rafael Cruz falsely stated he fled Castro-led communist Cuba. And Madsen's asking what else he has lied about. The reason this is so profoundly important is because this was a CIA op. So if Ted Cruz's father was working for the CIA as long ago as 1963, with Lee Oswald, where he was handing out, this brochure for the Fair Play for Cuba Committee, which was asking, you know, that the United States should be fair and even-handed in its treatment of Castro, as opposed to the Free Cuba Committee, which the Henry Wade, the district attorney in Dallas at one point, said was the committee that Oswald represented. He was corrected by a voice from the back. None other than Jack Ruby, who explained it was a Fair Play for Cuba Committee, a dramatic difference, because the Free Cuba Committee was an anti-Castro organization that wanted to free Cuba from communist domination, whereas Fair Play for Cuba was a pro-Castro organization that were seeking to develop Lee Oswald's persona as a pro-Castro communist sympathizer so that when they pinned the tail on him, they could say that they knew who had done it, that he'd been a communist, and that, you know, he was a supporter of Castro and all this other complete and utter rubbish. But I'm telling you, if I'd looked into it, you aren't. The others in my research group, Don Fox, Larry Rivera, Gary King, have just been blown over by Wayne Madsen's revelation. I mean, we study this stuff. To identify this figure as being Cruz's father, and he's right in the middle of the photograph. He's got a narrow tie like Lee, and he offers other photographs of him that enable us to verify that it is indeed him. It's really quite stunning. Now, another development, what consequences this is going to have, I can't begin to tell you, but Cruz is enormously unpopular in New York already. Trump is enormously popular. This Rince Priebus has already explained he's not going to turn over the RNC to Trump if Trump wins. Normally, you see, you get a victor of the nomination, like Matt Romney, for example, and the RNC just turns over its whole apparatus to assist the candidate. But because the RNC, the establishment, is upset with Trump, they aren't going to do it in this case. And the fact that they aren't going to do it is very telling. And as I mentioned already, Bill Still has a report of someone who overheard Rance Priebus give the instruction to make sure that the Diebold machines were set in Wisconsin to guarantee that Trump got no more than 50%. I mean, this is serious stuff. And it's going on right around us. Right around us as we speak. So, you know, bear in mind, here's another report, too. George Soros gave John Kasich $700,000 to stay in the race. $700,000 to stay in the race. This is very interesting because a Princeton professor came on the air and explained that because Kasich was in the race, the probability that Trump would gather 1,237 votes before the convention was at 90%. But that if Kasich withdrew, it would drop to 50-50. Well, they're using the manipulation of the voting machines in Wisconsin, which has a history of stealing elections, which Richard Charnin has explained. And while Mitch Hank featured me on the day of the election, he is reluctant to have me back, even though the evidence now is simply overwhelming. Mitch is a good guy. He is a slightly right of center. He's a talk show host. He, like many others, doesn't want to be too perceived as too far out. And even featuring me was therefore, I think, a chancy proposition. But he did it, for which I admire him. That was a courageous thing to do. It's just that this story, the proof we have, which is monumental, that the Wisconsin election was stolen to put Cruz ahead of Trump. I mean, just imagine if the Trump had taken the victory at clean sweep with all the districts, which he was set up to do, he'd have 42 more votes now, 42 more delegates, and there would be no talk about stopping Trump. Bernie would have won by another huge margin. Hillary, no doubt, would have been just as despicable in attempting to discredit Bernie, which is causing consternation among Democrats, where you even have no less a figure than President Obama expressing concern that the Democrats shouldn't start acting like the Republicans. But it's inevitable because Hillary was supposed to be the predestined candidate of the Democratic Party. She never expected that she would have any trouble at all. And I need to point out as well, by the way, that there are crucial issues where Bernie and Sanders are head and shoulders above Hillary. Bernie and Sanders both are opposed to NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, and to the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Hillary's husband, Bill, of course, introduced NAFTA, which has had the effect of gutting our manufacturing and industrial base. She has in the past described the TPP as the gold standard of trade agreements, but now under pressure from the left, she has backed off and said she doesn't support it. But she has a very high untrustworthy rating, which is well deserved. She's lied about so much. I will go through many of Hillary's lies again and again because they're monstrous and overwhelming. So some of the reasons why the TPP is so awful is that it creates a board of corporate attorneys that can override the laws and statutes of any of the nations participating, the 14 Pacific Rim nations, including the United States, up to and including the Constitution. Obama hasn't spelled this out. He sent his trade representative down to New Zealand to quietly sign the TPP. It requires ratification by the Senate. But this is a corporation's wet dream. This puts corporations in charge of everything. This is what the New World Order represents. Mussolini explained that fascism could equally well be defined as corporatism because it entails the merger of big business with big government. Well, that's what's going on here. NAFTA, the TPP, are manifestations of fascism. So when people complain that Trump is supposed to be like Hitler, that's simply ridiculous. It has no basis in fact whatsoever. And just to illustrate another of the TPP's consequences, If local regulations, environmental and anti-pollution laws, for example, preclude a corporation undertaking a project, they are entitled to sue for the profits they would have made had they been able to go forward with it. Another example is that food will not be labeled, whether it's organic or not, where Monsanto has genetically modified corn by adding an insecticide gene, it yields a bigger harvest out of the field. But when it's fed to laboratory rats, they become sterile within 6 months. That's a really great reason for thinking twice about the TPP. In addition, Bernie and Donald have denounced the wars in the Middle East. Bernie voted against it. Hillary voted for it. Trump has said it's been a waste of $4 to $5 and turned the Middle East into chaos. It's clear that he, like Rand Paul, is a non-interventionist. Hillary is a warmonger. Hillary has even announced at Dartmouth last year that if she becomes president, she's going to bomb Iran, which is a peace-loving nation that hasn't attacked any other country since 1775. Think about it. 1775. The Constitution only began its ratification in 1787. George Washington inaugurated 1789. So for longer than the United States has existed as a constitutional republic, Iran has not attacked any other country. Would that could be said of us. And third, Trump and Bernie are both strong proponents of the Second Amendment. Hillary is becoming completely despicable. We need our weapons. It takes 20 minutes for the police to respond to an emergency call from your house. The mayhem typically takes place in the first five. If you can't defend yourself, calling the police because they have guns to help you will be too late. Your daughter may have been raped, your wife mugged, you may have been murdered in the meanwhile. And if there should be a war with Russia, which Hillary and other neocons would love to provoke, we're going to have Washington and New York taken out immediately. We're going to be in a post-nuclear Jericho-type environment where every community has to fend for itself. And if they're disarmed, they won't be able to cope with marauding gangs that are there to rape and loot and pillage. So there's a whole lot at stake here on those big three issues. Bernie and Donald are head and shoulders above Hillary. These are good reasons to vote for one or the other. And to eschew Hillary Clinton, she does not deserve your vote. We have a caller here. Let me check. It's Alan from Nevada. Alan, how are you?
Well, fair, Madeline. One of the things that remains a mystery to me is the role played by Officer Tibbet. What did he do and why was he killed? I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you, Jim.
Sure, of course. Well, what you're talking about, of course, is Officer J.D. Tippett, who was shot in Dallas. It was alleged to have been done by Lee Oswald. He appears to have been on the periphery of the assassination, and I believe he was shot to blame it on Oswald. They actually planted a jacket. They planted a wallet, of all things, to make it look as though Oswald had done it. But actually, we know Lee was already in the Texas theater buying popcorn at 1:10, the approximate time the shooting took place, about half a mile or a mile away. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Not only that, but the first officer on the scene found four shell casings, which had been ejected from automatics. They were of two different manufacturers, Western and Remington Rand. He initialed the shell casings. A woman, Aquila Clemens, across the street, said that two men had shot Tippett. Neither of them looked like Oswald. Later, the shell casings were replaced by revolver casings because Oswald did not have an automatic. He had a revolver, and it's absurd to think he would have shot an officer four times, three times in the chest and once in the head, and then opened up the cartridge, you know, open up to take out the shell casings, which would incriminate him. I mean, that's no, he wouldn't, have, it's idiotic. But that's what they gave us. They planted on him a weapon, a World War II weapon that was totally unreliable. It was known as a humanitarian rifle in World War II for never harming anyone on purpose. And you know, The whole thing was fabricated. I've identified, actually, shooters at six different locations. JFK himself was hit four different times. I've already mentioned in the back, from behind, 5.5 inches below the collar. I published on that, and I presented a talk about this at Cambridge during an international conference in the UK, and then published it in an international peer-reviewed journal. You can download it online, just going for reasoning about assassinations. And just by locating where he was hit in the back, you already know the existence of a conspiracy, because the magic bullet, which was purported to have hit at the base of the back of the neck and to have passed through his neck without hitting any bony structures coming out his throat, was in fact intended to turn the entry wound in his throat into an exit wound, and then allegedly to have gone into the back of John Connolly. So they had to account for a whole lot of wounds when it turned out that a distant bystander by the name of James Tagg had been injured by a shot that missed. So that while they committed themselves to three shots, since one missed, they had to account for all the wounds by two. So they had to move the location of the wound in the back upward to the base of the back of the neck. David W. Mantic, MD, PhD, who is the leading expert in the world on the medical evidence, has demonstrated by taking a patient, create a CAT scan of a patient with similar chest and neck dimensions to JFK, and then plotting the official trajectory, that it's not even anatomically possible because cervical vertebrae intervene. So when you see these reconstructions on ABC and National Geographic and all that about the magic bullet, they're using models that don't have a backbone. They literally do not have a spinal column because the whole thing is preposterous. There are so many ways they muck this up. But because they have the power of the government and the media behind them, this was the occasion when the CIA introduced the phrase conspiracy theory or theorist to try to stereotype and dismiss critics of the Warren Commission who were making very precise and detailed points. I mean, Harold Weisberg, for example, in the volume two of his whitewash series, pointed out that Lee Oswald was captured in this famous photograph by James Alchins and that they were trying to obfuscate it. I mean, it goes back that far. Even Jim Garrison, who brought the only real case against for a conspiracy in the death of JFK, subscribed to Lee, having couldn't possibly have done it because he was standing in the doorway. There's a tremendous amount about this all over the place, but especially if you want to follow it, go to the new JFK show. You want to track down the real deal broadcast by media Broadcasting Center online. One of special note, I think, is my interview with the Major General Albert Stubblebein, U.S. Army retired, who was formerly in charge of all U.S. signals and photographic intelligence. You can find that on The Real Deal, episode 100, the 9/11 crash sites, where I went through all four of the crash sites and explained all the evidence that proved none of the planes crashed as claimed, which, of course, means that none of the passengers aboard those planes died in plane crashes that did not occur, and which also means that the alleged suicide hijackers actually weren't aboard the planes to commandeer them and cause them to crash, because none of them crashed. In fact, the following day, half a dozen or more turned up alive and well and were in contact with the British media in the UK. I mean, this is unbelievable. David Ray Griffin, in his magisterial work, The 9/11 Commission Report, Omissions and Distortions, reports that as his very first point, that a half a dozen of these guys turn up alive and well the following day, which means that the whole claim about, you know, justifying the war on terror because it was committed by 19 Islamic terrorists under the control of a guy off in a cave in Afghanistan is complete hooey. It's poppycock. It's rubbish. It's provably false. And I mentioned Wayne Madsen in the Midwest 9/11 Truth Conference. You can check out the Midwest 9/11 Truth Conference online. And in part two, I go through the evidence that, in fact, the destruction of the World Trade Center appears to have been a nuclear event using a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes The U.S. Geological Survey did very extensive studies of some 35 sites in Manhattan and turned up a host of elements that would never have been present had this not been a nuclear event in the quantities and relationships to one another that were found, including barium, strontium, uranium, lithium, lanthanum, tritium, where we also have the report that some 70,000 first responders and other residents of New York have suffered from or died from debilitating diseases associated with exposure to ionizing radiation, including multiple myeloma, leukemia, esophageal, and pancreatic cancer. These are all highly unusual ordinarily, but common from exposure to radioactivity. And where New York, in the kindness of its heart, replaced the air conditioning units in the city, because, of course, they wanted to make sure that the health of the citizens was preserved. They didn't want those dust samples that were captured by those air conditioning units to become available for study. So, you know, there's a whole lot going on here. In addition, we know that two of those planes, flights 11 and 77, 11 North Tower 77 Pentagon, were not even registered to fly that day. According to the Bureau of Transportation Statistics records, they weren't even scheduled. They weren't even in the air that day. And Pilots for 9/11 Truth has been able to establish that the planes that were used for that flight 93 and 175 were in the air that day, that flight 93 was over Champaign-Urbana after it had purportedly crashed in Shanksville, and that flight 175 was still in the air long after it had allegedly hit the South Tower over Harrisburg and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And if you want to go beyond episode 100, where you can learn about all the crash sites and how they were fabricated and faked, the most comprehensive two-hour presentation on 9/11, of which I am aware, is episode 103, the real deal, episode number 103, 9/11, who was responsible and why, where I and Dennis Camino, who was formerly the Navy's top electronics troubleshooter before he left the Navy and went to work for Raytheon, go through all the evidence that substantiates that 9/11 was brought to us by the CIA, the neocons in the Department of Defense, most of whom had come from the Project for a New American Century and were dual U.S.-Israeli citizens, and the Mossad. You'll see all the connections in setting it up, because this whole thing appears to have originated in the fertile imagination of Benjamin Netanyahu, today the Prime Minister of Israel, who held a conference in Jerusalem and published a book in 1987 entitled Terrorism, How the West Can Win, before the word was even a thought in the minds of Americans, and where 9/11 was set up to promote the objective of the project of a new American century, of creating a new American empire worldwide for the next 100 years by getting the U.S. involved in military exercises in the Middle East, where Wesley Clark laid out the whole agenda in a speech he gave at the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco in 2007 to destabilize the governments of seven countries in the next 5 years, beginning with Iraq and Libya, ending with Syria and Iran. By the way, our own intelligence agencies, all 16, concluded in 2007 that Iran was not pursuing nuclear weapons, a conclusion they reaffirmed in 2011, where even the Mossad in 2012 concluded that Iran was not pursuing nuclear weapons, 3 weeks before Bibi Netanyahu went to the United Nations and asserted precisely the opposite. If you want to be stunned, too, by, you know, Hillary's involvement in Libya, which was a peaceful society where Muammar Gaddafi was a dictator, but benevolent, sharing the wealth of the nation with the people, free health care, public education, go to The Real Deal, episode number 147, Hillary's Benghazi, How the West Destroyed Libya. I assure you, you will never think the same way about Hillary Clinton again, who paraphrased Julius Caesar from Shakespeare by saying, "We came, we saw, he died." This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, thanking all of you for listening.
I'd like to invite you to take a look at some of the most important products in the realm of health and hygiene I've ever seen, all from Trioxy. As many of you know, ozone oxygen is highly effective for many different uses in the home or office place, from purifying the air you breathe to the water you drink. In fact, the city of Los Angeles, among others, uses ozone to purify the drinking water for millions. Uses of ozonated water produced by the Trioxy Pure include washing your hands, disinfecting cuts and infections, brushing your teeth, and even washing and sanitizing fruits and vegetables in the kitchen. Meanwhile, the Trioxy Re-Ion ozone negative ion generator will clean your indoor air of pollen, smoke, odors, mold, bacteria, and viruses, and more, and will put extra oxygen into your bloodstream and clean your body just by you being there. I hope you'll drop by and visit GoHealthyNext.com and take a look. The prices are more than affordable, and the results are priceless. That's GoHealthyNext.com.
Known worldwide as the most consistently fascinating, informative, and unique program on radio, the Jeff Rentz program can be yours to listen to anytime, anywhere, whenever you want to hear it. For pennies a day, our subscribers can download any of Jeff's thousands of programs featuring a treasury of newsmakers, researchers, eyewitnesses, and incredible subjects, all in MP3, commercial-free, crystal-clear, 56-bit digital sound, and take these often unforgettable programs with them wherever they go. As a subscriber, you can also listen live at airtime, online, anywhere in the world, or browse through our archives of over 6,000 hours of legendary broadcasts. Subscribe now by taking the link at the top of Rentz.com and enrich your mind with the most unique panorama of vital information and the best independent, honest journalism in radio. Look for the subscribe now link on Rentz.com and give yourself the knowledge you need for these unprecedented times. You're listening to the Rentz Radio Network, nationwide and worldwide. Oxygen. It's nature's oldest therapy and plays an essential role in destroying viruses, bacteria, mold, yeast, and fungus, and keeping the human body healthy and strong. Now, you can give your body and your immune system a mega boost of disease-fighting oxygen with all-natural Oxy-C. So many people now leading a sedentary indoor lifestyle, most are in a chronic state of oxygen deprivation, which sets up a perfect environment for disease, general fatigue, and a host of other symptoms. Oxy-C is yours in simple, convenient capsules. Nothing to mix, nothing to hassle with. Take it with juice or water anytime. Feel a cold or flu approaching? Have no energy or spark anymore? Try all natural Oxy-C and prepare to be amazed. Oxy-C is only available from New Earth Health Solutions at Rentz.com. Look for the New Earth banner at Rentz.com.
The world is changing, and not for the better. You need to get ready, and soon. Get ready with ReadySupplyFoods.com. Ready with GMO-free 25-year food. Ready with the most calories per dollar of any storage food. In an emergency, calories mean survival. The USDA recommends a 2,000-calorie daily diet. At that rate, most other 30-day kits won't even last you 2 weeks. You need to get the most nutrition for your dollar, and ReadySupplyFoods.com sells the most calories per dollar of any company. Ready Supply Foods doesn't sell empty calories in the form of sugary drinks and desserts. Our 23 entrees and breakfasts are delicious and full of nutritious calories. Ready Supply Foods is the new leader in value and quality. Go to ReadySupplyFoods.com to see a comparison of the leading companies. You'll see that Ready Supply Foods sells you 50% more food for your money. Go to ReadySupplyFoods.com today.
Scientists in England have succeeded in stabilizing the time-honored substance in garlic that destroys harmful bacteria, viruses, molds, yeast, and fungus. This all-natural microbe killer is called Allicin C, and it's now available to you in 100% vegetarian capsules only on the New Earth page at Rentz.com. This powerful broad-spectrum antimicrobial agent is harmless to friendly bacteria and has been concentrated to equal an astonishing 35 cloves of garlic in each vegetarian capsule. Think about it. The antibacterial, antiviral strength of 35 odorless cloves of garlic in just one capsule. Allicin C is so effective it even destroys superbug MRSA in test after test. Allicin C is truly an incredible advance in natural medicine. And with the threats of bacterial and viral diseases and pandemics growing, no home should be without it. Learn more and order Allicin C on the New Earth page at Rents.com.
You've heard the ads on this radio station about Royal Velvet. You know you want and need the benefits that Royal Velvet offers, but you haven't gone to the website RoyalVelvetNow.com. You've procrastinated. You haven't started your journey towards dramatic improvements in that vim, vigor, and energy you've always wanted. Reward yourself. You deserve it. No, really. All you have to do is go to RoyalVelvetNow.com, click on the Rinse icon in the upper right-hand corner, and order a couple bottles of Royal Velvet, which is a month's supply, and you're on your way to experiencing the most life-changing product in the world. Oh, by the way, to experience just how powerful Royal Velvet is, do what thousands of our clients have done. Stop taking all your supplements and just take Royal Velvet. Do it for a month. You will feel better, look better, and be dramatically better. And besides being blown away by the results, you'll also be ecstatic over the huge amount of money you saved. There are 1,440 minutes in a day. It takes less than 5 minutes to place an order at RoyalVelvetNow.com. Go there now. Your life will never be the same.
Did you know the Earth's natural magnetic field has declined 90%, vanished over the last 4,000 years? We know that the human body repairs and rejuvenates itself during sleep, but without a normal negative polarity magnetic field around us, rejuvenation simply cannot happen properly. The ingenious Magnetico Sleep Pad restores the Earth's lost magnetic field, enabling us to sleep far better each night and regain maximum health. This negative polarity pad is so powerful, you place it under your mattress pad on top of the box spring. I've slept on a Magnetico sleep pad for over 25 years and owe a great portion of my ability to work hard to the physical rejuvenation I receive each and every night from the powerful magnetic field I sleep in. Visit MagneticoSleep.com and watch inventor Dr. Dean Bonley explain it all to you. That's MagneticoSleep.com.
Hi, my name's Gary King, and I've assembled the most formidable JFK team on planet Earth. We've got Dr. James Fetzer, Larry Rivera, who is the number one researcher in the world today when it comes to new research, and we've got Don Fox, who's not afraid to look a little bit deeper than anyone else. So if you're interested in what happened to the 35th President of the United States, then I invite you to our show. It's called The New JFK Show. And it's on YouTube. Go to Gary King YouTube channel, and we've got over 90 shows archived for you there. So if you really want to know the truth, and knowing that over 9 out of 10 researchers are working the other side of the street in a sea of disinformation, I pledge to you the truth about JFK. Go to Gary King YouTube channel and find out your true history.